This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Six 6:13 in the evening, and you're with Lynn and Kelvin on the Evening Edition. So our first actual story this hour is going to be focused on an article by the Sarawak Report on how the events over the weekend unfolded. So the portal's version of it basically has put Datuk Sri Azmin Ali as the mastermind behind all the political manoeuvrings that we've seen.
Yep, this article is titled Malaysia's Meltdown Moments, the inside story, and it's basically about how Azmin plotted to entice Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad and Bersatu away from Pakatan Harapan by driving wedges between the coalition and sowing distrust between Tun M and Datuk Sri Anwar Ibrahim. But the report closes by saying that Azmin's plan didn't work in the end, and especially after party leaders met up to speak to one another and managed to reconcile.
So essentially this piece gives a lot of clarity into one perspective of what might have happened. And it is, I think, important to say that because right now, the man who, I guess, is at the very heart of this thing, which is our interim Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, actually hasn't really broken his silence outside of that Instagram post that we were talking about earlier.
Back to work.
Just another day at the office. But we haven't really heard from him. Instead, we've heard people talking around him. Yep. We heard
from Lim Guan Eng yesterday during his press conference.
Yes. We've also seen Azmin Ali basically coming out and saying, no, we did this for Tun M. You've had other people pledging support left and right. So essentially, there are, I suppose, a few different versions of what happened. It's sort of a choose your own adventure. And until we actually hear from people, and even then, it's hard to say exactly what it is that happened. But like we said, the Sarawak Report's article basically details a breakdown in communication. It also kind of shows this real divide within the coalition of different leaders within the coalition worrying that the other was essentially going to usurp or overthrow or just kind of cut across to the Agong, to the Yang di-Pertuan Agong, and, kind of change things around. So that's really that version of events.
Yeah, I think with this particular report, it's really perhaps giving some of us who've read it, I've read it and I found it quite thrilling that there's another perspective to it, because you're really trying to make sense of what's going on. There's a lot of confusion, there's a lot of statements, and then you're also trying to match it with what other politicians, what other leaders have also said. There's also another blog post by Khadir Jassin, who also just, I think he just submitted this, or rather he published this afternoon, more or less closely in the same way that Claire has, or rather the Sarawak Report has written about it. It's more or less about the same. So, at this point in time, it's just confusing. You're really just trying to triangulate as many facts as you can.
So we're going to be crossing over now to Claire Rucastle-Brown, founder of the Sarawak Report. Claire, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, yep. We can. Firstly, thanks again for joining us. We wanted to kind of, I guess, when you first heard or when you first became aware of what was going on over the weekend, what were your main investigative priorities, I suppose, when looking at the situation as a whole?
Well, I think I had a slight luxury in that I was just listening to people, actually. I mean, just listening to all the confusing stuff you've just been talking about makes my head go, starts to fill up, and you can hardly think. And it just must be so hard for everyone in the middle of this to be able to follow what's going on. And the journalists, of course, all weekend were running around, chasing events and, taking statements. And he said, she said, just as you've described. And it really appalling. But my advantage was I was just talking to people as much as possible from each side and getting an idea of what everybody thought the other was doing. And also managed to get some of these, slightly scoopish bits of information that I then put into the article. It's my perspective. But I think if you're looking at the situation now, what has happened? Dr. Mahathir did not go and join an UMNO PAS pact. Mm. He actually stayed. And as far as we're all seeing, the latest information is that he's sitting now and all the Harapan leaders are coming back into his office as we speak. And he is forming a unity government. And it's quite clear that given that Besatu and GPS apparently as well, and all the others, all the old allies of the previous government are coming back to coalesce around Dr. M, as he's becoming known as a sort of, that there is a government that he is able to form. So stability appears to have been regained, and it does not include UNOPAS PACs. And that was the momentum that was going on at the weekend. There was an attempt, quite clearly, to set up a separate government to overturn the election and to have a government that included UNOPAS, breakaway PKR headed by Bersatu and Dr. Mahathir. It's not happened.
With so much conflicting information going around, how did Sarawak Report identify Azmin Ali as the conspirator behind Sunday's attempted political coup?
Well, I mean, look at what happened. I mean, he's the one that's marched off with his bunch. He's the one that's left his party. I think what you have now, ironically, is probably a strengthened Mahathir, in that he's now got everyone to rally around him and is now proposing to have a unity government, which will make him powerful. But I think it's also strengthened the hand of Anwar within his own party, because Anwar's weakness for the last 2 years has been the rebellion within his own ranks against him and against his agreed succession as the next prime minister. He's got rid of that lot now from PKR. So I think both those two leading politicians are now in a position to strengthen their hand. Mahathir to get on with the next stage of government, and Anwar to prepare for this apparent agreed succession.
And, you know, have you been in touch with the Azmin Ali camp? Because aside from their press statement last night, I'm just curious whether they've actually refuted or responded to the allegations that were made by Sarawak Report.
I have spoken to people within the camp, yes. You know, one of the words that really resonated with me from people talking from that side of things was confused. Many of the people who've been following all of these developments have themselves been confused. And I think the statement where they came out and said that, I mean, having prompted this rebellion that caused the Prime Minister to resign over the weekend, they are now saying that they did it all in order to shore up and support the Prime Minister. I think they must be really confused. But I don't think everyone in the camp was confused. I think Azmin Ali wants to be the next Prime Minister. And I think he's been working very closely with PASS and through PASS UMNO in order to try for that outcome. And I don't think it's worked.
With so much information coming your way, how did you go about verifying the credibility of the info you were getting?
Well, I'm happy to say that events appear to have borne them out, don't they? I mean, what do we have now? We have Mahathir did not, as many, many people who said who were fearful from the Pakatan camp, feared that he would desert the government that was elected at G14 topple the coalition and set up himself at the head of a new coalition of UMNO and PASS. That was a fear that I spent the whole weekend hearing and which has not been borne out. So that's about as much indication and verification as you can get. Likewise, I think there was a huge amount of fear in the Bersatu camp, and I mean that's been pretty much in the open, that similar treachery was being planned against their leader. And that's been borne out as not being the case. Anwar Ibrahim went to the king yesterday, and he did not attempt to set up some kind of rival government toppling Dr. Mahathir. He pledged his support. So I think, you know, the verification is there. And, you know, I'm not going to give you my sources that I spoke to over the course of coming to those conclusions in the weekend.
So looking to the article also, that there was one, you know, there's a particularly sort of intense middle section, I think, which describes the ways in which lines of communication shut down, in which factions really started to fracture. And, you know, it's sort of a central issue that there was precious little communication in a time of crisis between DAP, PKR, Amanah Bersatu. From your understanding, what caused these sorts of blocked lines of communication during such a fraught time?
Probably, I think so much was going on. I mean, we all of us, didn't we? We thought that for a good chunk of Sunday that Dr. Mahathir was heading to the palace to see the king, together with a bunch of leaders from UMNO and PAS. And I think we have to, you know, look at what was mobilized. This was not just something that, you know, happened at a drop of a hat. There were big powers. A lot of organization went behind it. You know, you saw people being, you know, the entire political parties being flown over from East Malaysia. So it was a big operation that went into play. And I think people from both the, from all sides in Harapan were left wondering what the hell was going on. And for several hours, everyone was sitting and waiting. And I think that probably included the leaders too. But what I do know is that there was a sense of shock and betrayal on either side for several hours. And I think the worst point was probably Sunday evening, where, you know, I think probably, well, Dr. Mahathir did not turn up at that party that was supposed to be in his honour, you know, presumably, sensibly, you know, went home and kept quiet. But he issued a key statement. He did do that. He issued a key statement to say that he was doing nothing. And meanwhile, I think there were people in the other side, on the Pakatan side, who were wondering if, you know, he was just going to get up the next morning and go and see the king. That was the feedback I was getting. But what actually everyone did do was the sensible thing in the morning, and they rang each other, and then they saw each other and they solved this. And I think that was where the madness behind this coup attempt falls, because in the end, people were going to talk to each other. In the end, they were going to find out that they'd all been told a load of lies. In the end, this was a desperate measure, a desperate effort by a bunch of desperate people. And don't forget how desperate some of those people are. A lot of them are facing, you know, strings of charges and spending all their days in court.
What can you tell us about Bersatu's reasons for exiting Pakatan Harapan so soon?
I have not, you know, I think you should speak to Bersatu about that, but I think that they felt that their leader had been betrayed. The intricacies, I am not sure of, but as far as I'm aware, Bersatu is now back as part of Mahathir's coalition of supporters.
And just in closing, I suppose, we do have a message on WhatsApp from a listener named Kevin, who says, "Hi, Claire, is there still some hope, or do I need to suck it up for another 3 years?" Which I think relates to our last question, which is, you know, what do you see happening next in this whole situation?
Well, I think everybody, you know, I think having gone through what you've all gone through this weekend, and me thinking, my goodness, will I ever be able to go back to lovely Malaysia again? I think stability. We've got stability back. And you've got a prospect of continuing to, you know, to solve the various issues that have come out of some of the things that went wrong in the last government. That's point one, isn't it? But you also have a vision. So many people who voted at the election had a vision of reformasi. And I think that's what Kevin is wondering. You know, that is really, you know, something that all the MPs should now focus on. There's been far too much focus on rivalries, selfish ambition, you know, internal ruptures, which has taken away the unity that's needed to bring in the reforms that the people of Malaysia, I think, by and large, wholeheartedly want to see. And hopefully that second stage of this government, now that it's been rescued, can still achieve that.
Claire, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
You just heard there from Claire Rucastle-Brown, founder of the Sarawak Report, speaking to us about their reporting on the political upheavals that happened over the weekend that are continuing to reverberate even as we speak. And, you know, we asked Claire a question just then about Bersatu, and she kind of said, well, you know, if you want to know the answer to that, speak to someone from Bersatu. We're not going to, but tomorrow morning, our colleagues on the Breakfast Grill will. So they're going to actually be speaking with Rais Hussein, who is the Parti Pribumi Bersatu strategist, chief strategist, I believe, and Supreme Party Council member as well. Yep. So anyways, the point is, if you have been waiting to hear where Bersatu fits into all of this, hopefully, fingers crossed, some answers will be coming your way tomorrow morning.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.